Hey, Anna, this is pretty exciting. We're going to be talking about meteorology today. And meteorology sounds like meteor, right?
It does because it has that word in it.
Yeah, it does. That's true. So, but I mean, meteorology is weather and meteors are things in space. What do they have in common?
They're both talking about the sky.
Well, you know, meteors are shooting stars. Exactly. They are both in the sky. They are up above. So meteorology is the study of up above. Now, I think astronomy is a study of up above, too.
Shouldn't you guys have had the franchise on that?
Well, I don't know.
Seems like a mistake.
But meteors and meteorology, so they're talking about stuff in the atmosphere. Mm-hmm. So meteors, when they go across the sky, they're actually in our atmosphere. They're only like about 50 miles up when you can see that shooting star. So the ancient Greeks associate all that stuff with weather.
And that seems like a stretch, but
it's a huge stretch.
But who can argue with the ancient Greeks?
Thank you, as a fellow Greek.
I know. That's what I was trying to go for.
From the studios of Cincinnati Public Radio, this is Looking Up, and I'm Dean Regas.
And I'm Anna Heeman, and we're both from the Cincinnati Observatory, where Dean is the astronomer and I am not, but I'm asking him all kinds of space-related questions. In this episode, we're talking weather and weather forecasting with Jason Myers, a digital meteorologist with Cincinnati's E.W. Scripps Company. All right, so we're talking weather during this episode, and I'm excited because I love living where there's, like, all the seasons.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes all in one week.
Yeah, in one day.
That's right. It's crazy, and I'm into it.
Yeah, I mean, it went from like 50 drama. Degrees this morning, and it's only gotten colder. You know, it's like, it doesn't make any sense.
You know what's coming?
Snow.
You're supposed to say, like, I don't know what.
I don't
snow.
Know. I yeah, don't
no,
know,
you're
Anna.
Right. You did a good job.
Hot weather, heat wave, unseasonably warm weather. Okay.
It's too late, but snow is hopeful. I love snow. I guess I'm a weirdo. But astronomers. Whoa. I was going to say astronomers.
Astronomers.
Don't love snow.
No, we don't love snow at all. This is like, these months are just awful here in Cincinnati. I mean, you cannot get a clear night to save your life. I mean, that's all that I care about.
That is literally all you care about.
If it would snow all day and then be clear at night, that'd be perfect. But all we get is this gloom, this perpetual layers of clouds over other clouds. And so, yeah, but that's the way it is. That's what it is living on a planet with seasons.
That's true. Do you think does it surprise you that people don't realize that we can't see, like, through our telescopes, and you can't see through that?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like...
All the time. They think, oh, well, it's cloudy, so what? You can look through the... you can see through the clouds. Don't your telescopes have X-ray vision? And unfortunately not. And then once one of our astronomers made the joke, said, oh, well, yeah, come on over. We'll put the cloud filter on. And he was totally joking, but they thought it was serious.
And people like followed him over.
Yes. Where's the cloud filter? Can you put the cloud filter on the telescope this time? I was like, nah, sorry, we can't use that.
Ours is broken.
Oh, like, can't you like shine a laser beam through it and break up the clouds or do a dance?
You do get a laser. You have a laser, so it's not like don't act like it's not bothering.
Those green lasers, but they will not dissipate clouds, unfortunately.
Fine. You heard it here first, folks.
There is no cloud filter.
That's right.
Yeah, sorry.
So, even though I do love snow and I'm not a hot weather person, what does astronomy have to do with seasons? I mean, there's a whole...
Oh, man.
Like, I know everything. Okay,
I know everything.
Don't give me that face,
The answer's always everything. But, so what does astronomy have to do with the seasons? Well, it's all based on the Earth's orientation in space. So we are tilted. If you remember those globes from elementary school.
Vaguely.
They're always tilted on a slant, right?
Yeah.
And when I was a kid, I was like, what elves are making these on slants? Like, why are they always tilted like that?
Were you trying to quality control Santa's workshop?
I was like, man, they really are making these shoddy globes. They're all slanted, like 23 and a half degrees for some reason. I was like, there's a workshop. They're on a cliff. I don't know what's going on.
They're going to give them a pass because it's Christmas time.
All right. I went to a poor elementary school. Maybe this is the best they could come up with. I don't know. Anyway, so that's actually how the Earth is in space. We're tilted at this angle that's 23 and a half degrees. And so as we're tilted, we keep that tilt as we go around the sun.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're in the northern hemisphere and we're tilted towards the sun, then we get more solar energy. And so we get summer.
Mm-hmm.
We're tilted away from the sun, then we get less energy and it's winter. And that's the whole thing. It's all astronomical. It's the way the Earth goes around the sun with this tilt.
And so places where it's always cold or always warm, what's the deal?
That's because they're by the equator. So if you live in the tropics, you're going to get the sun up and very high in the sky almost all year round. So if you're between the Tropic of Cancer and Tropic of Capricorn, that's when the sun is really high in the sky. But if you're in the extremes, like in the North Pole or South Pole, right. then you get, basically, if you live on the North Pole, you get 6 months of daylight and then 6 months of darkness. It's like super extreme.
It's like one or the other.
Yes.
That was kind of my gotcha. Like, oh, well, why do people, but you're like, I got this, please. It's
fine. But then this does lead to like the question of, or the misconception that maybe the seasons are caused by the distance to the sun. Like, are we closer to the sun in summer? And right. that is absolutely not true. Every year, because the sun, the Earth does vary its distance to the sun, mm-hmm. but we're closest to the sun every year around January 4th.
January 4th?
January 4th. June 4th. No, no. See, exactly. January 4th. That's when we're closest to the sun every year. And we're farthest from the sun around July 4th every year. And I know.
Irony.
That doesn't make any sense.
Or something.
Because the distance doesn't make any difference. It's that tilt. And so even though we're farther from the sun in summer, we're tilted towards the sun, and that makes the difference.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. And plus, if the distance made the difference, you know, the seasons are opposite in the southern hemisphere and the northern hemisphere.
Right.
So, yeah, it's all tilt. So when we're tilted towards the sun, southern hemisphere is away from the sun.
Okay, that makes sense.
I should really have brought a globe in here.
I know. Can I get a visual aid?
Yeah,
I mean, like,
we'll add this to
the
podcast.
So what's the optimal, okay, in your mind, like, what's the optimal, like, conditions for viewing? Like, what time of year also do you think is, like, the best?
Well, at least in the Midwest, seems like August, September, October are the best.
We have, like, a million events at the observatory.
I know. That's why we do it.
Now I get it.
Yeah. I mean, you get a beautiful, like, September, crisp September night where it's not humid. There's not a cloud in the sky. You get these crisp nights. That's the best. Summertime is tricky because you get a lot of haze and humidity, and that affects your view. And then wintertime, well, it's just mostly cloudy most of the time. Or if it's really cold, then you're in the dome and the heat of the building can actually mess up your view a little bit. So you want it like just the right temperature, like you're right around 50 degrees at night, no humidity. That's what you want. And so a lot of these big observatories, that's the conditions that they go to. They go on tops of mountains where it's clear and not humid every day, basically. And so whereas we established an observatory in Cincinnati where it's cloudy 50% of the time. Other observatories were
50. Well, maybe
that's pretty close.
Okay, fine.
And other observatories, like in Arizona and California, have like 350 clear nights a year.
Oh man,
I'm gonna retire there. That's for sure. I'm already got a little spot picked out in Sedona. So I'm working on it here.
Is it because it's getting cold now? You're like, that would be great because they're gonna have clear. They're gonna keep having clear nights.
Yes, Chamber of Commerce, Sedona, please send me some information.
Oh man. Well, I'm sorry you're stuck here.
Oh yeah.
I guess. I mean,
I'll suffer.
Yeah. What are some of the things that are good to see in like in the winter?
Oh yeah. So our winter sky.
This
right
feels
now,
like I'm interviewing you. I got lots of things to talk about with it. Yeah, I feel like I'm very like the winter has got me thinking about. I don't know. I just love it.
We could do a whole show on winter and then I can interview you about winter probably.
Yeah. Ask me about winter. I'll tell you about winter.
All
right.
Well,
astronomically speaking,
Orion is the big guy up in the sky right now. The constellation Orion has the 3 stars in a row for a belt. Easy to identify. Rises up in the east just after dark. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things everybody can identify pretty well. And there's a lot of bright stars around Orion. And when we get towards like late January and February, then we get to see this big ring of stars called the winter football that covers like half of the southern sky from the bright star Sirius all the way to the star called Capella up at the zenith. And just lots of cool, bright stars for winter. So if you get a clear night in the winter, then you got a lot to see.
It gets dark early. You should be happy about that.
Oh, man. It's a lot better that way. So, I can start my viewing at 5:30 and
just keep going as long
as be asleep by 9. It would be just good. In summer, it's, I got to start at 9 or 9:30.
Yeah.
It doesn't even get dark till 10
bad.
Sometimes.
Yep. You know, if only there was a book or something that listed all the things that you could see in the night sky.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. There might be one.
How do we segue into mentioning your book?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I have a new book.
Oh, what?
It's called 100 Things to See in the Night Sky.
No, it's not.
And it's broken down by season, too. So there's has all the winter highlights.
Okay,
it's
really,
highlights.
I shouldn't know then.
but yeah, it's got all the great things to look at, stars, constellations, mm-hmm. planets. And so you can pick it up on Amazon called 100 Things to See in the Night Sky.
Now, if they come to the observatory, though... If they're local or they want to make some kind of pilgrimage,
yes,
you will sign it for people, won't
you? Oh, yeah. If you come to the observatory and I'm there, I'll sign it. No problem. That'd be great. Thanks. Thanks for the plug.
Yeah,
thanks for the shameless plug. So as winter really starts to take hold, we thought it was a good time to talk about weather. And we're really happy to have with us Jason Myers, who's a digital meteorologist and video content creator for EW Scripps Company. Well, Jason, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So I think you have one of the coolest jobs. Being a meteorologist is, I don't know, it's just one of those things that I kind of thought of when I was growing up. Maybe I'd be someday. But how did you get started into it? How did it all happen?
I kind of took a strange path in that I initially was looking at news, but the daily grind of the news just got me down. So I ended up checking out the weather. I really enjoyed it, and it just kind of took off from there.
So, like, the weather in Cincinnati in December doesn't get you down at all? It's just the news does.
Right. The news is, I'd rather be in the weather department.
Well, so, all right, this is one of the questions I've always wanted to know, is that, so when you go to meteorology school, is there a green screen? Is there a green screen class? Like, do they teach you how to do that, or are you just thrown in there and you're, like, pointing all over the place?
There's not necessarily a class, but you do have to take a class where you learn on-air skills, and the first time is just kind of getting thrown in front of the green screen. And one thing a lot of people don't know is that, it's green behind you, but when you're looking at yourself in the camera, everything is in reverse. So it's not like looking in a mirror where you hold up your left arm and it's on your left side. You actually, when you hold up your left arm, it's on your right side. So it can be a little tricky getting used to it, but you eventually get the hang of it.
Is there something you could wear that would make it look like you were just a floating head reporting the weather? I mean, professional question.
Yeah, if you find a leprechaun suit, that would do the trick. Anything the shade of the green screen, which is really the big reason they make them green. There used to be blue screens and green screens, but you know, there are navy suits, and those would sometimes cause some issues. So the bright green, not many people have bright green suits or dresses.
That's a good point.
For the ladies out there that would blend in.
Well, that's what happened with Jack Horkheimer on the Stargazer show, is that he was bald and his head disappeared in the background, and it looked really disturbing. So then he had to wear a toupee. So anyway, that's just my inside story.
Oh my God.
Anyway, well, let's go back to weather.
Jason, could you talk a little bit? I'm confused. What's the difference between like a meteorologist and maybe like a weather person or someone? Like, is there a certification or how does that work?
There is a certification through the American Meteorological Society or the AMS, but as long as you've taken some weather classes, I mean, they can throw just about anybody in front of the green screen, assuming they know a little bit about weather and they can do a halfway decent presentation. Now, if you're going into the National Weather Service route, that's working for the U.S. government, so they're going to require the actual a degree from an accredited school in meteorology, and more than likely, they may even require a master's as well.
Okay.
Well, all right. So now Anna really loves the snow.
Oh, my God. I love it.
There's nothing worse than when we get a forecast saying, 3 to 5 inches of snow, and we get nothing.
I get very upset.
So she gets, it's terrible around the office. There's no snow. Where's the snow? So what, give us the inside scoop. Why is it so hard to predict, like, to nail down these things?
You're dealing with fluid in the atmosphere, and it's really tough to, I mean, we have very good models that can help us predict things, but you know, one slight thing and we can see things changing in a big way, especially for those long-term forecasts. You know, you see one little thing glitching, I'd say 5, 6, 7 days out, that can grow and grow as we head through the rest of the week. But you know, just one little tweak here and there, a couple degree difference, and all that snow can just be rain, and then we're looking farther north for the snow.
That's the worst.
Which, that's the case a lot of times in Cincinnati. We get we're right near that rain snow line, so we either get that rain or we can get a whole lot of snow.
Well, hopefully we'll get snow someday ever again.
Very soon.
Who knows? Maybe never. Maybe we'll never get any more.
No, don't talk like
that. Okay, sorry.
Do people ever, like, blame you, Jason, for, like, the weather? Like, do you see someone?
All the time.
Do they really? Are they like, this
all
is all
time,
your fault?
Yeah.
That's not nice.
I always tell people, don't blame me for the weather because you're not congratulating me for the great weather.
Touche.
Make sure, if you're going to do it, you got to do it both ways.
Can you think of an example of somebody that was kind of a little over the top?
Not off the top of my head. It was usually just some good-natured ribbing.
Oh, that's fine.
Very diplomatic. Very diplomatic. Well, you mentioned long-range forecasting. And, you know, things that we get at the observatory sometimes, people come in, they say, oh, well, you know, I read in the Farmer's Almanac that next spring is going to be exceptionally dry and next summer is going to be hot and... like, are those just, like, total hooey? I mean, like, how can you predict 6 months in advance, like, general trends?
Yeah.
Is there something to those?
When it comes to the Farmer's Almanac, I like to tell people they're in the business of selling almanacs. A lot of their long-term forecasts also read like horoscopes. You know, that's very vague and mysterious. Like, sometime around the month of May, there will be some rain, maybe some rumbles of thunder. So, of course... you're going to be right when that's all you're giving anybody.
Yeah, but, you may meet a man with a carnation on the street corner, and it might snow on top of you.
Exactly.
When I read those, but it's amazing how so many people really go by that, and they come in and they say, oh yeah, you know, it's going to be a cold winter.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's been around a long time, and they have brand loyalty. So there are a lot of people that stick by it, and I try to avoid those arguments. If somebody loves the Farmer's Almanac, love the Farmer's Almanac, you can swear by it. I'm not going to put my money on it.
You're going to use science.
Yes.
That sounds a lot better.
Science on my side or something like that.
Well, so let's see. Let's say you see a weather system coming. I mean, like, I'm a nerd and I have favorite stars. Do you have favorite weathers? I don't know. Is that singular, plural, whatever it is? Do you have favorite weather patterns?
You know, I really like this part of the country because we get all kinds of weather and it does give us a good variety. To be honest, I have no interest in ever experiencing a hurricane. So I think we're in a good spot here. We can get those big thunderstorms. We can get even tornadoes. We can get snow here. We get a little bit of everything and, you know, it just keeps you on your toes.
I could see that. Yeah, we got all kinds of stuff happening. And then, so, Jason, at the observatory, you know, the dean and, you know, all the folks are always looking at their tools that they have to kind of predict the weather to see if we're going to have a clear night or a cloudy night. What kind of, like, tools do you use, or what's the difference kind of between what they have and what you have access to? I'm sure it's a lot.
Yeah,
a big
it's
difference.
A big difference.
I don't know.
I think it's a big difference.
I try to play weatherman when I'm,
you pull up a website that looks very official, but
really?
I don't think, it looks good. Official. Yeah. Like kind of, but
yeah. What do you,
yeah, what do you
what's
use?
The inside scoop? What can a amateur like myself use?
I like to look at the actual forecast models and read the discussions from the National Weather Service. So I'll go to the long-term stuff. There's a forecast model called the GFS. Ooh. And that one's, a lot of these models you have to take with a grain of salt because, I mean, they are forecast models, so they're only as good as the data you put in, and they're not always exactly right. So that's what the National Weather, that's what meteorologists do. We look at these forecast models, we kind of know how things have been trending, how things have been looking, and then we put that, what's been happening, as well as what the models are saying, and we put that into the actual forecast.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I use this one called Clear Sky Clock or cleardarksky.com. It has a list of, well, all it tells you is it's going to be cloudy or clear. That's the only thing I care
is
about.
Is it just one word on a website?
Right. Cloudy, clear. Just, cloudy. That's it.
You just refresh and right. See if it's going to change.
I do. And if it always never changes,
oh
it's always cloudy.
Wow. That sounds, again, science.
No,
that sounds very
it's a little better. It's a little better than that.
Oh,
it has
God.
Gradations of cloudy, partly cloudy, mostly cloudy. That's all I care about.
Yeah. Beyond that, we'll leave the other stuff to Jason.
Yes,
he can
exactly.
predict the rest
can
of it.
Can I see the stars? Yes or no?
That's exactly.
That's what we want to know. Can you see the stars? Can you see an eclipse? Exactly.
I need one that says, is it going to snow? Yes or no? We can just boil it down to the basics so I can get excited or not.
Well, Jason, thanks so much for talking with us today. This is a lot of fun.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All righty. Great. Thanks a lot, Jason. That was perfect.
That was. You're
no
a natural.
Problem.
Yeah.
It's almost like you do this for a living.
Oh, yeah. It's almost like. Yeah.
It's almost like.
Yeah. We'll have to do another weather on other planets video.
Ooh.
All right. Yeah. I got to come up with a good idea and see if I can get out of the office. They've tweaked my job a little bit, so I don't get to go outside and do as many of those fun videos anymore.
Oh, man.
It is ironic you don't get to go outside and you're a meteorologist. That's where you'd spend a lot of your time, but...
That's right, you think.
That's funny.
Nah, we'll just look out the window.
That's right.
All right, well, thanks again.
That's the worst part. When you're in a TV studio, they don't even give you a window.
I know.
Oh,
it's so dark in there.
A dark room with all these lights.
Yep.
Well, the next time I want to rage against a wrong forecast about snow, I'm going to think of you in the windowless room. Right. And be like,
oh. Steve Raleigh.
Yeah. Call Steve Raleigh.
That's fair.
That's right. Kevin Robinson did it. He did it. All right. Thanks, Jason.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Okay. You have a good one.
See
you. You too.
All
right.
We've been talking with Jason Myers, a meteorologist for the E.W. Scripps Company. Jason, thank you so much for your time today.
Well, we know kids love to talk about space and science and weather. And they asked some great questions. So we have one, I have one for Dean from a kiddo who visited the observatory. And this question is, what's a blue moon?
So we
had like a super moon in early December. What's a blue moon?
Blue moon is, well, I could say it's the time where the moon turns blue. It doesn't. It doesn't actually turn blue.
This is misleading.
It's completely misleading. And it's a completely made up thing. It was something that we think goes back centuries or millennia, but it only goes back to about the mid 20th century, where somebody wrote an article in Sky and Telescope, and he called Sky and Telescope magazine, and he called a blue moon when you have two full moons in a calendar month. And that title, that definition just stuck.
That's it.
So you can have full moon on like the first of the month. Uh-huh. And then it takes about 30 days to go through the cycle of phases. So you can have one on the first and then you can have one on the 31st. So that's what's going to happen in January. We have a full moon on January 1st, New Year's Day, and then another one on January 31st. So it's not blue.
I'm just waiting for people to come out and be like, oh, I can see it tinted. Like, I don't think they're going to be like, oh, yeah. It looks blue.
It does look. Yeah, we can kind of start it. Yeah, try it. Oh my gosh, doesn't that look a little blue to you?
Like pass it through the crowd, pass it on. It's blue.
Well, so we do a little trick at the observatory. Is during full moons, it's, you know, when you look at it in a telescope, it's so incredibly bright and blinding. Mm-hmm. We put a filter on the telescope, so we put like a little color on the filter, and I always pick blue. Dim it down with a blue shade.
You sly dog, you.
I know. I'm bad. I'm bad. But this blue moon's going to be very cool because it's also a lunar eclipse. So on January 31st, in the morning sky, you'll see a part of the...
In
the morning sky.
That's weird.
So before sunrise, you can see in the East Coast and the Midwest, you can see only part of the moon blocked out before the moon sets. Mm-hmm. But if you live in the West Coast and farther west, Hawaii and other places west, then you can see the whole total lunar eclipse that day.
Wow.
So very cool. I have a blue moon, blood moon, eclipse, all on the same day.
It's going to be quite the day.
Oh, yeah.
Can't wait. That's it for this episode of Looking Up. Thanks to meteorologist Jason Myers for joining us. We'd love to hear from you, so get in touch with us. We're on Facebook. Just search Looking Up. And on Twitter at Looking Up Podcast. Or drop us a note at lookingup@wvxu.org.
Definitely, you can ask us a question, give us a topic suggestion, or ask your kids what they'd like to ask an astronomer or scientist, and maybe we can answer it on a future episode.
And remember to subscribe to Looking Up on iTunes and rate us there, or listen on Stitcher. You can also catch the show at wvxu.org/lookingup. Our theme song and additional music is by Why, that's WHY? From their album Moline, courtesy of Joyful Noise Recordings and Terror Bird Media.
Looking Up is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. Kevin Reynolds is our producer, Josh Elstro is our engineer, and Jim Nolan provides additional technical assistance.
Thanks for listening. I'm Anna Heeman.
And I'm Dean Regas. Keep looking up.